show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 360. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And once again, I welcome someone else back to this show, a former guest of mine, Shalisa Powell. I talked to her just over 5 years ago on episode 209. I'll link to that in the companion blog piece and the show notes. And at the time, she was an event planner and an entrepreneur working for Dining Out. She also talked to me about her time as a Denver Nuggets dancer, her time in the fitness industry. It was a great chat. Shalisa is someone I've actually known since elementary school. We went our separate ways for a long time, and then we were brought back together by mutual friends Mel Yuli and Jenna Santi. Now, it bears mention that this was 2009. She's in the live event business. Think about what happened in 2020. And what that might have done to her business. So, let's welcome her back. She is joined by her husband, Jeff Suskin. The two of them together are the head honchos of Dining Out. And we kick right off this episode by talking about 2020 and what they went through. Because, man, I think they got it, from a business perspective, worse than just about anyone. They were right near the top of businesses that got at both barrels from COVID. But they've come back and they've absolutely crushed. How do I know that? Think about the fests they put on. Rare Steak Fest, Chicken Fight, Top Taco. We talk about one they did in 2019, the wedding party, which was unreal. It was so cool. Just wait for that story. That's near the back half of this episode. But I walked away from this conversation thinking, these are two of the coolest cats out there. Because to have the vision to come up with events like this, and then the zeal to pull them off, man, that's cool. And our lives are richer because of it, because I love having cool shit to do, don't you? Even if I don't go to it because I'm a lame old parent at this point, I love knowing that I have the option of going. And my kids are getting to a certain age now where I can go, you know what? I can do more stuff. I can get out more. And when there's cool stuff like Chicken Fight or Top Taco or Rare Steak Fest, I go, hell yeah, dude, let's do it. So this episode is jam-packed. It's almost an hour long. It flies by because both Jeff and Shalisa are incredible people with a terrific story to tell. So, you are going to absolutely love it. Couple of announcements from me before we get any further. As I record this, I am but a couple of days away from celebrating 10 years to the day of doing this show, which I find completely remarkable. Later this month, got a couple of 10-year anniversary events, so stay tuned to the socials for what I'm going to do for that. I've got a marquee guest coming, one you're absolutely going to love, particularly if you're here in Denver. You are going to know this person, recognize this person. They are an institution. And yes, I'm being intentionally vague. I don't want you to know because I want you to be surprised. So I have a great guest coming up for my 10-year anniversary. I'm also bringing back the mailbag. So we'll do a solo episode. I'm going to reach out to former guests. They're going to ask me questions and I will answer them in a solo app. So two great things coming up here on the John of All Trades podcast. That'll be later this month. Once again, stay tuned to the socials. That's JOAT pod across platforms. I will have announcements there. But that's not why you're here today. You are here today for episode 360. I've got Jeff Suskin and Shalisa Powell, the two head honchos of Dining Out, and they're going to talk to us about the wedding party, Rare Steak Fest, Chicken Fight, Top Taco. It's an awesome, awesome show, and it starts right now. Five years ago was the last time we did this?
Almost to the day.
Almost.
In February. In 2019.
It was in February. Gosh, kind of a lot's changed since then, yeah?
A lot has changed, yeah.
This might come up on your memories.
We were just looking at the picture.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we did it at Wink, and I haven't talked to Mel or Jenna in I don't know how long.
I saw Mel the other day.
Oh, good.
It was so good to see her.
Yeah, because she moved up to Fort Collins, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you're still kind of doing the same thing, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
So at the time, we did talk about Top Taco. We did talk about Chicken Fight.
Yes.
We talked about the wedding party, which I know we'll get back to.
And I think we talked about Rare too. 2019 was a big year for us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, oh my God, 2020 hit. We got to cover that. But first, that is the voice of Shalisa Pau. She is the COO of Dining Out Events. I'm also joined by Jeff Suskin, who is executive producer of Dining Out Events. Jeff, welcome to John of All Trades. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Was reached out to by someone who works for you, who is a mutual friend of ours, Nikki Bridges. God love her. And I'm so happy to revisit you because you all put on, I would say, some of the most fun events in Denver. When you think about Top Taco or you think about Chicken Fight, you go, see, that's like, that's what I want the experience to be, especially post-COVID. Right. Yeah. If you love these things and you love being with people, I would argue this is going to be some of the best bang for your buck. So talk me through real quick, either one of you who want to handle this. So 2019, you said, was a big year. Then 2020 hits.
Mm-hmm.
What did that do to you in terms of the live event business? I can probably guess, but let's hear it.
Oh, it's like utter destruction.
Just know? Annihilation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, when you think about, oh, my business was off this year 20%.
Mm-hmm.
We had a year that we were off 120%. You know, some money went out the door,
oh, no.
but zero came in. And
ooh, okay.
There was no relief. Like, not for, you know, we're part of, like, what would be considered the gig economy.
Sure.
So there was no relief for, you know, companies like us. There was the SVOG, which was a package by the SBA that went.
Wait, what was that one?
That was for the shuttered venues.
Oh, yeah.
But the people who got the money from that was like Hearst Foundation gets $10 million. Danny Wimmer Presents gets $10 million per festival. Dining Out Events got zero.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
God. So, yeah. So because you guys are like gig related, that kind of makes you not qualify for PPP either, right?
Well, the thing was, it was very much about, no, we didn't get any of that.
I got two rounds of PPP, even though I'm the only employee in my company.
Yeah, nope. So we didn't have,
geez.
Because, and for precisely the reasons you said, so we would just have, it was a very seasonal staff that we had.
Yeah.
There was that, but also shuttered venues, that round of funding was also very much for like live music performance.
Yeah.
So now we're culinary. So they were like, well, maybe you should be applying under like the restaurant relief.
Uh-huh.
And I was
but
like,
that doesn't fit either.
We don't fit either. So we were hosed.
Oh no.
Yeah.
You guys at that point are neither fish nor fowl.
Nope.
So, okay. So what did you do? How did you survive? How are these events still happening? Given that, I mean, 120% of your revenue, that's devastating.
You know, I don't have a good like percent. All I know is money kept going out.
Right, right.
Zero
yeah, yeah.
coming in.
Sure.
And when I say 120% is we sold tickets, like pre-sale on tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So now not only can't we make money, we're refunding money.
Yeah.
So that happened. So, and you know, the good thing was structurally, I always said that the money that you get in for pre-sale of tickets, it's a liability. It's not your money. The second the doors open up, that's your money. So it's very much like the sales tax at a restaurant. It's not your money.
Okay. You're almost like a holding company at that point, right? It's almost like escrow in that way.
Entirely.
Right? Because, so people have paid for this, but when the event happens, then, you actually collect it. I've never thought of it that way. That's crazy.
And a lot of companies are like, oh, we've got this money in advance. We'll use that to pay for everything. And so we, with Shalisa at the helm, was like, no, it's not our money. It stays over here until the doors open up. So whenever the doors open up, it's like we can all high-five each other. Awesome. The doors are open up. Press the button.
You cash some happy checks at that point,
great.
In addition to real money.
So the good news was we had that as a thing that we did structurally. Like, it's not in our bank account.
Okay, yeah.
So fortunately, it wasn't that crazy to return that money.
Sure.
But for a lot of companies, I'm sure if they were using that, I mean, there's a number of companies that I read about that got into a lot of trouble with that.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Well, you're out over your skis at that point. Because as you said, that's not your money yet.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be the good and the bad.
Okay,
you know? So fortunately, we didn't spend that money and returned it. But then what did we do? We had a baby.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So we spent a lot of time with a newborn while everybody was kind of locked down. And it wasn't like, oh, can we what can we do to have events? Like people like, oh, you can do small events. You can do this, which a lot of companies socially distanced.
Virtual events.
Virtual events.
No. How do you do a virtual food event,
you
though?
Don't.
Like, yeah, I mean, that doesn't make sense. I mean, you could do like a virtual comedy show, and I attended a few of those.
Yeah.
They're awful. Uh-huh. Right? It was terrible. Mm-hmm. We got some live streams of some bands playing and stuff, and it was all just like, it was all really underwhelming. A virtual food fest, man, like even if you sent all the stuff, which would be a logistical nightmare anyway.
I have no clue. I don't even begin to understand how to do that.
So you didn't even try.
And the other part of it, and this is a little bit of a knock upon myself, is like, I don't know how to do a small, like a 500 person event, like a really, you have to be really tight on budgets. You have to have things really locked down. I think to do small events, it's a craft to do smaller events. And the only thing that I know how to do are these really big events where the budgets are like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, cause they're large. And so stuff can cover things. And you know, I might frustrate Shalisa with that because she definitely is extremely budgeted and things are in spreadsheets and things along those lines. Mm. But smaller events are what's the right way to put this? A small event is everything has to be to the dime.
Okay.
It's like on percentages. It's extremely structured. So
you've got what you're talking about is a larger margin of play with a larger event. But the thing that amazes me about that is because I've done events before and I realized they were not for me, because as we talked about in our first episode, there's always someone behind the scenes at every event you go to, like having a heart attack, you know, like dealing with a crisis or dealing with, you know, some guest who's unhappy or a vendor who didn't show up or whatever. Right. And I realized I didn't want to be that person. I also realized getting people to an event is not the easiest thing in the world, especially here in Colorado, because Colorado people don't RSVP for things because there's always an abundance of options. So I love your swagger and like, no, we throw big events and people come to them, which is amazing to me. Where does that confidence come from?
Oh, the confidence. I mean, it's horrifying when people tell me like, oh, I'm like, if somebody were to
come
to me.
Yeah, but you do it anyway.
It's what we do, but to say that we're confident in it is how can I put it? Is when somebody comes to me and says, oh, I'm not religious. Okay. I just am thinking to myself, you've never been scared enough. So
it's kind of like how they say there's no atheists in foxholes.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
that's exactly right. Yeah. So, and it's, I saw a t-shirt years ago, our friends, at Symbiotic Events had it. It said, friends don't let friends make festivals.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
We have confidence in the production of the event, but the getting people there is always the most stressful thing for our entire company, selling tickets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you get the word out and how do you compete against this great weather, the mountains? We have an abundance of sports teams. We have breweries and restaurants everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to run this nonprofit thing called Mile High 100. And we discovered, you know, people would always tell me like, it's a great idea. It's kind of like Shark Tank for nonprofits. So we would invite three nonprofits. People would show up and pledge to donate $100 to whoever, like one, but they would each have 5 minutes to get up there and present like, hey, here's why we should earn your money. And people go, that's a great idea. And I go, hey, will you come to this the next time? And they go, no. And you go, God, I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? So I realized getting people to a place on a date at a time was something that I didn't want to do as much anymore. So what do you attribute finding success with the festivals that you do, like Chicken Fight, Top Taco?
What's like the sauce?
Yeah. How did they?
Yeah.
Or at what point did you realize we really have something here?
I think that you get one shot. It comes down to this singularity. Mm. So you have 1 4-hour window in one time a year to give it all you've got. And so on the larger event side, it's kind of where you pull out all the stops.
Okay.
And to me, if you do an event and you do a great job on the event, you get another year.
Okay.
So you don't get like, oh, we're iconic. We can always sell.
Yeah, we're an institution like now.
You get a year. So everything comes down to that day is selling next year's event.
You bought yourself 1 year.
You buy yourself like the good graces of 1 year. You're going to get great reviews for the next year or things like that. So you have this 1 4-hour window to absolutely stun people.
Wow.
And so that means you have to go spend a small fortune and figure out how to stun people. So it can't just be like, oh, there's this event over here and us over here, and we're going to do things similar to how you do, and we're gonna optimize
you.
All of our profits and do all that. And then everything that you don't do on that one day at that one moment takes away from the next year.
Hmm.
So you go in guns blazing, and when and this can frustrate Shalisa because I'm like, and what about a Jumbotron? And what about and we have 3 stages of music. Let's do 5 stages of music. And we've got this over here. We need to do this over there. And of course, the charges start racking up on
sure.
stuff like that. So then but then I'm just like, how else are we going to sell all the tickets is if we have an event that's just run of the mill, that's the same as what anyone else is doing.
Or if it's like a retread of a previous year, right?
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to evolve what you do year to year because, I mean, I'm sure people like the experience and want the fundamental core of the experience to stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, if I'm going to spend my money and spend my time, and in the case of our demographic, pay to have a babysitter, that kind of thing, like this is where I'm investing my time equity.
Yeah.
You've got to give them maybe something a little bit different. How much does that play into your calculus?
Hugely. I mean, for especially for Jeff, doing something different each year is like his number one.
Well, that I would say in terms of marketing is like marketing is really how you respond to the conversation that you're having with who you're marketing to, like the attendees, you know? And so to me is marketing really comes down to new. And we were just discussing this with restaurants. Every text I get about, oh, where should I go? I have family in town. Oh, here, here, or here. Well, what's new? What's different? What's this?
Yeah.
So if you don't keep it new and fresh and relevant, then you start falling into that sort of like, you know, that cycle of just like creating something, maintaining something, and then it sort of dies. And then
yeah.
you got to redo it. And so I'd much rather get out of that karmic cycle and just sort of take the rebirth side of it on our own shoulders.
Wow.
And think about how do we make it, because from a marketing perspective, when we put out all the expense of marketing is it has to show new, different, improved, all the things that you see in your daily life. It's
right.
like new and improved, our new product, our different
sure.
flavor of this. That's what resonates with people. And so for our events is I think the kiss of death would be it's the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And we've watched it happen countless times with other events. So we don't want to do that.
Jeff, you said something that I really wanted to key in on that I liked, and it was the conversation that you have as part of your marketing. When I talk to other people about marketing, they don't typically frame it as a conversation with your attendees or your target audience, right? But the way you described it as a conversation, it's a feedback loop. Can you say more about sort of your philosophy when it comes to marketing and listening to the people who have either come here or the people who you want to come here?
Oh, Nikki's going to love me saying this because this is a lot of Nikki's theories on marketing
okay.
I'm about to throw you. And so Nikki is John's old friend.
Yeah.
So marketing is really our response to that conversation.
Okay.
You know, so that's the way that we're kind of trying to look at things is there's this conversation. Are they engaging with the content we're putting out there and with the offers that we're putting out there and with the promotions we're putting out there? And then when we measure how everything's going, we have a response to that.
Oh, sure.
So then the conversation is really like what's resonating with people. And so the bad place to be is like, oh God, none of this is resonating. We're not selling. We got to go change course. As opposed to Nikki is like, here's what we're looking for. Here's all of our responses. Okay, we're at XYZ percent on how this is converting or this and that. So she's already
wow.
answering the question prior to the conversation occurring. So she's never in a position where she's like, what are we going to do? We didn't hit this number on conversion. Conversion's really low. She's already thought of if this, then that.
Oh, okay.
And there's already materials created to deal with that.
So you've got almost like a flow chart here. To me, it speaks to like the old axiom when you're playing chess, right? When you play chess, you want to be 3 or 4 moves ahead of your opponent, or at least thinking ahead in that way. Like if they do this, then we're going to do this. That's what I hear you describing. It's a chess game. Like if the audience responds this way or doesn't respond this way, then we tweak it and we go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of...
Yeah, she's like, listening.
Yeah.
She's really listening to how our marketing is resonating with the public or things along those lines. So that's like the biggest part of like I think what Nikki is doing really well.
Wow. That's fantastic. And you recently brought her on, right?
Yes, for specifically this philosophy.
Gotcha. Yeah. For this approach. Do you feel in the past that kind of thing was lacking? And was that, as you look at your team, you know, even if you're the Denver Nuggets, like, what do we need more of? Right.
Yeah. This is, I mean, I'm laughing because everything I say, Nikki's going to be like holding her face and being like, because I'm stealing all of her materials.
Perfect. And, well, you know what? She could have booked it for herself, but didn't.
Yeah. So what generally happens is part of it that we giggle about is the curse of a good offer. It's like something actually works without your planning on it working. So then you do more of it. And then you do more and more and more, and then it just all of a sudden shits the bed, and you're kind of like, I don't understand. It worked before. Then I spent $500, then I spent $2,000, and now nothing's occurring. What happened? I had it figured out. But you really didn't, you know? So they call, you know, that's like the random acts of marketing. And you do more of it, and you're just always like throwing stuff against the wall.
Right.
Nikki's philosophy on that is everything's measured.
Wow.
So that's just fantastic. A very different approach to marketing. Agencies, I think there's like maybe some big agencies who do something similar, but
yeah,
her approach is that everything gets measured.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That is like the least glamorous and least fun part of doing this work. I mean, like it's really rewarding and really useful, but I know when clients would ask me for measurement, I'm always like, oh God.
It gets fun once you if you can set it up correctly. So like strategically, when you're like, oh, it's in front of
me. This is probably why
face,
I don't do this anymore.
And I can see like how this is like what's effective, what's not effective. Also, how counterintuitive it is. Now that's really like a fun thing too. You're like, wow, people are going here. Mm-hmm. People are looking at this in this certain way. It never goes according to what, you know, the smartest people in the room say is this is what's going to happen. It doesn't behave like that. Right. So the expectation throws out the window, and it's like, we're not putting that expectation on it. We're going to let the data tell us like exactly what's happening.
So again, it comes back to listening.
True.
Incredible.
Which is why I needed to hire somebody, because it's not my strong point.
Well, also part of the reason we realized that maybe some of it was kind of what Jeff was talking about is last year we expanded into Houston.
Oh, wow.
And so coming into a new market and understanding a new market and figuring out that what we do in Denver doesn't necessarily work in a brand new market kind of was a catalyst for us to be like, maybe we should figure this out a little more. Like maybe we should dig a little deeper.
More strategic.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our thinking. That's funny.
And here we're kind of spoiled. You have 20 years of business and we've got 115,000 emails that we can go press a button and send it to. We've got large followings here and there. We've got text lists. And then you go into a new market, and I was like, I can't live like this. Going into a new market, and the things that I said, I'm just throwing money at the problem, and none of it was working.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, I'll just do more.
Sure.
I'll spend more, and that's going to solve the problem, which if it had, I wouldn't, you know, I'd be like, okay, you just got to spend your way out of whatever the issue is. And that is not what happened, even a little bit. So that opened my eyes up to like, there's got to be a better way.
Certainly.
And then started working on it. Now getting strategic and looking at things takes a lot of the stress out of there, because it's like you're preparing and you're ready to look at the numbers and you have a plan in place for if things don't hit in the ways that you think that they're going to hit. Mm-hmm. And so you're measuring things, and that's a much better way to live.
It sounds like a much better way to live.
Yeah.
Shalisa, we talked about your background last time you were on the show, and I'll link to that in the show notes so that people can go back and visit that one, because that was a really fun chat that we had. You know, talking about your history through fitness and, you know, dancing for the Denver Nuggets and doing all sorts of different things. Jeff, I'm curious, what is your background and what led you to arrive here as the main executive producer for Dining Out Events?
So it started with publishing.
Okay.
So we did a thing called the University Reporter, which was, I was like 24, and it connected all the colleges together. And so it was very much like what The Onion did, but with my brain at it. So I'm one person trying to figure it all out. So this is our version. And I didn't really know what The Onion was.
Where'd you grow up?
New York.
New York? Okay.
Yeah. But then moved to Colorado in 92.
Okay, cool.
So in 1993, we start this university publication. We're going to connect all the campuses in and around Colorado. And it was like, I mean,
was it satire like The Onion?
Lots of music and movie stuff and, you know, tattoo artists and all the things that college kids were into in 1990. It was grungy, so tattoos were big then.
Yeah. So
this is 93, 94. I mean, it was creative. in some senses, lo and behold, we came back the next year and it actually hit, and hit by my standards at the time, which was like, oh my God, I actually take a paycheck. This is awesome.
Spoken like true entrepreneur.
Yeah. The funny thing is the next year, The Onion actually did come to Boulder, Denver, and just crushed us. Like absolutely, you know, mopped the floors with us. As hard as we tried, the trajectory was definitely plateaued and then went downhill.
Well, and The Onion added the AV Club. So.
Oh, and they had a number one best-selling book on the New York Times. And everything they did was and I hated that I would read it and it would be really funny. And it like drove me nuts. Even worse was the two guys from Wisconsin, because that's where it's from.
Yeah, yeah.
Moved in next door to my business partner's house, so we were next door neighbors.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was terrible. It was, and they're not bad guys now. If I think back on it, I can't remember their names anymore. But it was like at the time, I was like every day, you know,
you're sitting there on the McCoy Ranch, looking right at the Hatfield, essentially
adjacent to each other. So so we'd go to the front doors every day. It was like the sheepdog and the roadrunner, like checking in at work every day.
The sheepdog and the coyote.
Chief Dog and the Coyote, correct.
Yeah, just punching in like, okay, well, now it's time to fight.
It was not great. But the good news is we were getting older, so we were getting away from
college.
By
the way, I just have to pause here because people love The Onion. You are just about the only person I've met who would say, like, I hated that The Onion came to Colorado. How funny is that, you know?
Oh, they smoked. We got smoked.
But, like, I totally get why, but that's just a funny footnote.
Yeah, yeah. And what's even worse is when you read something that you hate and you find yourself laughing and you're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Oh,
it's
you
terrible.
Pricks.
Like, yeah. And the AV Club was great. And I'm these are the only movie reviews I actually read. And
Nathan Rabin and Scott Tobias and, Jason Heller. Like, Jason Heller ran the local chapter of the AV Club too.
Yeah.
So like, and some of these folks have been on my show, but anyway.
Yeah, we got smashed by them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are you going to do? Right. I mean, it's the Onion. It's an institution now.
I mean, you had to take an honest look and say, like, we're not going to.
We're
stay
cooked.
In business.
Yeah, we got outflanked.
The good news was that we were getting a little bit older. We had some restaurant contacts. My business partner at the time came back with this thing from Nantucket, which was all the photos, like all the menus photostated and stapled together, and everybody on Nantucket used it.
Oh, wow.
Then I went and visited my sister in Miami at the time. She was a concierge, and I was like, oh, where do you eat? And she opened up an accordion file with all the menus.
Yeah.
And then we thought, why don't we just make a real magazine and put all the menus in it? And dining out kind of got born.
Wow.
So then that hit, and we got into like 15, 20 cities with that before the financial crisis in 2008.
Yep.
And then COVID really did us in, you know, in 2020. But in 2014, at the time, we were helping with South Beach Food and Wine.
Okay.
And we're helping with Denver Food and Wine. The thing that I thought was interesting was if you went to those events, everybody at those events would be talking about the after parties. So there were daytime food and wine events. And just as it got fun, which was 5 o'clock, it got really fun.
Right.
And then it would end. And then everybody talked about the after party. So we were like, well, why don't we do something? But F the after party, this is the party.
Yeah.
So at the time, 2014, taquerias weren't huge yet.
Yeah.
Tequila, if you said tequila, people were like, oh, I'm so into tequila, Don Julio, Patron.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, there's a lot of room for this one.
Yeah.
So we put together Top Taco for the first time.
Wow.
And like I said, that was a scary proposition. I think we were 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out, and we'd sold like 250 tickets.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my God, we're going to lose like six.
We're going to lose our shirt.
I can't even believe what I've done. So it was horrible. And then we did the event and 2,500 people showed up.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. It just went bananas in the last week.
So like you sell the first 10%. And the back 90 shows up?
Yeah.
That's
So that's wild. We squeaked out of that one. Got out of that one with our shirts on. Like, we didn't lose money. It was looking really bad 2 weeks out.
Wow.
And then
What happened in those 2 weeks, though?
I think it just...
Or was it just simmering underneath the surface? And everyone's like, yeah, I'm going to go to that, but I'm not going to talk about it.
I don't know. I couldn't put a finger on, like, why. No. I don't know. All of a sudden, everybody showed up, and it was a blast. And
what a feeling.
Hit. Yeah.
It's like Wayne Stock.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. I had no clue what I was doing. And then I think what the event company took off when Shalisa took over.
Okay.
So she has
when was
her
that?
Own 2018 when you got involved, and in 2019.
2019 was my first full year as producer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was like everything changed then. There was, she put all procedures in. It was embarrassing a little bit to go into it because she's like, what about this? What about that? What about this? And you know, it was, we used Google Sheets, but there was like 90 Google Sheets.
And right.
So Shalisa organized and processed out everything that we did, mm-hmm. which took her since 2019. So, but that was when we had the ability to actually grow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it got, and then 2020 happened. At what point did events start coming back for you all?
2021 was when they announced the All-Star Game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We were waiting, and we didn't know what was going to happen, and I don't remember when it was, March?
Yeah, Major League.
No, they announced it in April.
They announced it in April.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be like in Atlanta.
They announced it in May. I remember it was May 3rd or something
but
like that.
But we had a feeling that they were going to announce All-Star yeah. Game. And once they announced it, that was our, okay, we can do an event now. Like
it went ballistic. Yeah. Okay. Like it, two phones to the ear trying to like get everybody signed up. It was
like an 80s stockbroker.
The tickets, it went bananas.
Yeah.
Everything went bananas. It was something out of a movie.
Yeah.
Like, that was really, really an interesting 2021
Definitely.
For sure.
Well, because, I mean, I was ready to dive headlong into a mosh pit at that point and like go see concerts and stuff. And yeah, I remember that really well. We ended up having our, because, I mean, I'll date myself slightly here, but like, I graduated high school year of 2000, so our initial 20-year reunion was COVID. Like, it got Rona'd, and so we punted it to 2021, and man, we had huge turnout for that. It was great.
Yeah.
Like, once they lifted all the social distancing restrictions and large percentage of people got vaccinated and stuff, everyone felt confident to go out again, and everyone was ready to go back again.
100%. Yeah, it was definitely an interesting year to throw an event because there was a mix between people who were like, I don't care, I want to be around people, yeah. and people who are still nervous about being sure. around people. So
there are still people who like don't do certain things. It's 2024 and it's like, no, I still don't want to go to a gym. And you go, really? Because that, okay. I mean, that's a personal choice.
Yeah, it's almost like a PTSD from it all.
Yeah.
It's strange.
What can I say? So since 2021, how have things been going? You said everyone was ready to come back. Has it continued on an upward trajectory for you all?
We've been growing and our events are, you know, everything's going good with the events. 2021, though, was an interesting year because we went from 0 to 100 in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And it was very unexpected. And so now it's just more like we're in the cycle of like business,
mm-hmm.
you know, things along those lines. And we've grown a lot with a lot of new faces and different people who are working within the company.
Sure.
So there's not two phones up to my ear at a time like that was. That was with a skeleton staff. Oh my God, we need people to work. We need people to do any. It was.
Yeah, we would joke
loopy.
About like, I'm a web designer.
Yeah. it was crazy, you know, because yeah. I mean, we went from, well, we can't work with anybody to.
We need everybody
yeah. and you don't have any money coming in. So that's like the most interesting part of it is, okay, yeah. so all of this is going on, all the deposits are getting put in, everything has to go out the door again. And okay, this is crazy.
Wow.
So, but we got through the season and it was terrific. And then 2022 was solid, really solid. 2023, we moved into Texas. And I think also that year, 2021, 2022, we were like, well, what's the next thing we're going to do? Because we're always trying to do something different.
Sure.
So that was when we took over Ehlich Gardens for Chicken Fight.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that.
That was just seemed like pie in the sky. Like, could this really happen? And then they were like, let's do it.
We went to Ehlich's because we wanted to use their parking lot for the event.
Oh, sure.
And they were like, well, why don't you use the park?
Why don't you do it
like,
in the park?
What? We can do that. You'll wow. let us
And then
come
we would tell
there.
People, like, can we have the roller coasters open and we can do everything? They're like, why not? And then, so that was pretty crazy. So like every year we try to bring something. The 2019 before we
yeah.
fell off a cliff, Shalisa concepted the whole wedding party, which was outlandish and amazing. And
outlandish is a good word for that because
yeah.
like what an insane idea.
Insane is the right word for that.
but yeah. I remember you talking about it and I'm like, it's interesting because you know, weddings are, they can be, or at least they're presented as this deeply, intensely personal kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you ask anyone honestly when they go to weddings, none of them feel all that different from each other.
No.
Right?
No.
And they're kind of impersonal.
Yeah, it, in many ways. And like one of the things, I've been married now for, it'll be 15 years in October, so like 14 and a half years. I look back sometimes at who was at our wedding, and weddings are just such a byproduct of who's in your life at the time.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you think, okay, well, we have to really think about this guest list, and, you know, we got an A list, and we got a B list, and we got all this. I look back on it and I go, what did it matter? Like, it was one night. It was a party. We had a great time. And so
it takes over people's lives too.
It really does.
An entire year.
And so, like, I think what's interesting for me though, and I want to get your perspective on this, is I can only come by that knowledge having gone through it once.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to tell me, like, you're going to do this wedding party and however many other couples are going to get married at the same time as you, and you're all sort of sharing the cost of this, that's a tougher sell to me not having gone through it. It's right. Easier now.
Uh-huh.
But
you're like, yeah, I definitely want
to
do that.
Yeah, that's got to be a walk uphill for you to get people to do this. So
huge walk uphill.
I don't even know how it came. I'm babbling right now because I don't know how it happened.
Yeah, but I think the whole thing of it is...
But like, how did it go? Because you were in the middle of planning it last time I interviewed you.
Yeah.
And you did it once?
Once.
Okay, and how did it go?
It was the best thing we've ever done. I mean, really? We do amazing Phenomenal. Things. We do. I love every single festival we put on, but the wedding party was the best thing we've ever done.
Why?
It was so different than anything that had ever been done. It was something that could have turned out really bad. Like, it could have gone really, really bad.
Could be. like Firefest.
It was like everything hit.
Well, it was the year of Firefest, so everybody was like, oh, you're going to be the Firefest of weddings. And I was just like, oh, and I was like, really? Are we?
Like some publications that I really like were like,
oh, were they nasty to you?
Not really, but they were like, oh, Ben Higgins from The Bachelor is promoting this thing.
Well, maybe you should go back and tell, because you're saying Ben Higgins and all the rest, but there's a whole story.
But yeah, let's go back for anyone who, you know, doesn't have this front of mind. Describe for me the concept of the wedding party and then walk me through it a little bit.
Okay. So Jeff and I are married. We were engaged in 2018, mm-hmm. and we had just finished Top Taco 2018.
Mm-hmm.
We went to brunch with Jeff's sister and brother-in-law, and we're just talking about, like, what are you going to do for your wedding? I didn't want to have a wedding at all.
Hmm.
I was like, let's elope. Let's, like... I'm over weddings. I'm not.
My wife and I were kind of the same way too.
Yeah.
But we didn't get that for family reasons.
Yeah.
But then Jason Lazaroff, my brother-in-law, anything that we say, if he's like,
credit.
If you don't TM, if you don't attribute it to me, I take it personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, why don't you just get married at a festival? Do it at one of your festivals. And he's like, no, better yet, do a wedding festival.
Oh, wow.
And then...
So we just kind of incepted that?
Yes.
Crazy.
We were drinking mimosas.
Perfect.
And then all together at the table, we were like, well, you can't just throw a festival for just yourself. Like, that's silly. What if we had 10 couples get married at the same time? And then it's a real festival.
And everybody chipped in.
And everybody pays a portion, because you pay a lot for a wedding. And then we were looking up, like, the average cost of a wedding in Colorado at that time was like... just under 40 grand.
40 grand?
For an average run-of-the-mill wedding.
Yeah. 65.
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot of money. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so we...
Then we started looking up the wedding industry in general. Like, a 30% wedding taxes by photographers, anybody that you say you're doing a wedding. Oh, yeah. Would you like us to bake you a cake? Awesome. Oh, it's a wedding. It's $8 a slice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we were like, all they do is just like run a train on anybody who... is getting married. Yeah. So this industry needs disrupting.
No, the wedding industry is like Suge Knight, right? and everyone who's getting married is like Vanilla Ice, like over the balcony, like getting held by Suge Knight.
Like, and I, you know, wedding planners, there's the whole thing.
But also we
it.
Had been to some weddings around that time and had left early at all of them, because it's just like, you know, the couple, you mm-hmm. may know a couple people at the wedding. It always is the same thing. You're sitting at a table with people you don't know. You're eating decent food, hopefully.
Maybe.
And then people are dancing on the dance floor, but you don't know anyone. So you're like, let's go.
And God help me if you go to a wedding and they give you like drink tickets.
Oh my gosh.
You go, okay, really?
Like, I mean, there's some like, you know, basics to party planning. Not everybody goes through that, but, and it's expensive. I get it. And probably one of the best weddings I've ever been to was a potluck. It was everybody brought a dish. Everybody brought bottles and beers.
Wow.
It was terrific, but everybody knew what they were getting into. It was so cool.
Yeah. You're setting the expectations properly with
but
that.
But the $50,000 wedding puts you in that really weird spot. I'm an average wedding and I'm getting worked on everything. And it's not exactly what I want it to be because I'm so – I have to keep to a budget. Uh-huh. But it's the best that we – it just seemed to me like what an industry to disrupt.
Yeah.
And then you go look into all of the – what would you call that? The traditions of a wedding. And with Me Too kind of coming up at that point in time, mm-hmm. giving away the bride like you're a piece of property, you know, right. Or the best man. I think that was like you raided the village and you're like, you clocked the bride's family and took her out of the village. Like there was all these really strange things. And then we started looking up like the white dress and things along and the cakes. And this was all out of magazines during Queen Victorian days. People couldn't afford white or sugar or things like that back in turn of the century, turn of the 20th century United States. And then during the Depression, these magazines started coming up with all of these sort of ancillary things that happened to a wedding. Oh, you need silverware. Oh, you need, you know, home goods and all the rest of it. And then the whole diamond thing with De Beers.
Right.
And that was like, oh, it's 3 months of your
salary.
This is all stuff that's like fabricated. It's completely created by, you know, by marketing companies.
I have a full set of china that we almost never eat off of.
Yeah. Like we have plastic plates that I always use.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we had all of these things. So we're at a table with a napkin writing this all down and laughing about it. And all of a sudden we're like, can we do this? Is this like really a thing?
I was still like,
how insane are we?
No, we can't actually do this. Like, this is a fun conversation.
Idea. Yeah. This is like great fodder for like over drinks, like over brunch, like you were describing.
But if you know Jeff Susskind, you know that he doesn't like ideas to just live as ideas. He wants them to actually come to life.
A man after my own heart.
So he started thinking of people he knew. And one of the people that he knew and we know from Denver is Ben Higgins, who was
before that, though.
Okay.
I went to Juan and I said, okay, let me talk for 5 minutes. Don't interrupt me. Just let me throw an idea out there. And then if you think it sucks, just tell me it sucks. And then I talked for 5 minutes. I was like, no interruptions, 5 minutes, just let me speak. And he held his head in his hands and he looked up at me and he cracked up. He's like, I love it. I think it's great. And then
it's kind of deranged genius when you get right down to it.
100%.
Which I love. That, like, my favorite genre of things, and I'll give you an example of this, is I have a cross-stitched framed thing on my mantelpiece that someone cross-stitched DMX lyrics onto. And it sits there and people look at it. It's like, oh, did your grandma make this? And they go read it. And they're like, y'all going to make me lose my mind up in here. Is this DMX? Like, that is too stupid to exist, right? That is my favorite genre of things.
Too stupid to exist.
And so
that's like, actually a great, or, you know, or the other thing that came to mind was like, how does this not exist?
Yeah. Well, because that's some of the most brilliant stuff. Right. It's like you realize it comes into existence and you go, how has this not been around for like 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So you get down this road. He loves it. Mm-hmm. And that had to be the kiss of death. Right.
Death. And then he doesn't tell me that he's telling other people about it until after he gets feedback from other people and starts really formulating it.
So you've already focus grouped it.
Yes, 100%. He had focus grouped it.
I did. I did send it out to like 90 people. Like, and I was like, what do you think of this? Yeah. Not 90, like nine people.
Somewhere between 9 and 90.
Okay. It's a fairly wide deviation, but whatever.
So Ben gets involved and he was like, I'm in. Let's do this. Like, let's just make a video and see if people want to do it. What could be the harm? So we make this very low budget video of Ben in what was supposed to be a really beautiful field, but it was brown. It was like,
that's right.
We scripted it. It was not a bad script.
The script was actually mediocre.
Like, this is the event. If you want to apply, here's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I made a Typeform or a Google sheet where people could send their stories, send information about themselves, send videos.
Yeah. Sure.
And we put it out right before Thanksgiving break and didn't think about it very much.
Mm-hmm. I was definitely stressed. I was thinking, this is a dumb idea. I can't believe I struggled for a while, like pressing send.
Well, and Ben put it on his Instagram, which he has, you know, millions of followers. Sure. So we were like,
so Ben's like, I'm pressing send. We're doing it. And doing it. And I was like, okay, fine. And then I just take my phone and throw it off the side. I'm like, I'm not looking.
Perfect.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And?
A couple days later, we had over 100 people
apply. Really?
Oh, there's hundreds of thousands of people online going nuts.
Everybody is, you know, like the Ben Higgins effect, the Bachelor effect.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It's a show I don't watch personally, but like,
it's got a big following.
I mean, I'm familiar with it. It's an institution at this point. I worked with some women one time who had like, it was almost like a Bachelor, like it was like a fantasy football game, but like for the Bachelor.
Yeah.
You know, like you earned points for various things that would happen in episodes. And I'd listen to them talk. I'm like, God, you sound like fantasy football people or pro wrestling nerds. Like that's it. So I understand the show on that level.
Yeah.
It's just aesthetically, like that's not going to be a show that I'm going to engage with. But I recognize why people like it. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, they gamify love.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're combining two things that people are super into and putting it together in a really unique way.
Yeah.
Which has become completely not unique.
No,
like
not
it's
at all.
It is as
no, that's how they do it regularly.
Yeah, it's about as using it over and over.
It's
and over
it's
again.
Formula
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it. So okay, so the event itself, how did it, and how many couples did you end up ultimately selecting?
We selected 8 couples.
Okay.
By the end, and we decided to become the 9th couple.
Oh, nice.
Married. So it was also well done. Our wedding.
Yeah.
Well, hey, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. I was like, if we're going to tell these people that this is the best way to get married and we're engaged and we don't do it, like, are we actually being truthful about we think this is the best way to get married? We really believed in it. So there were 9 of us that got married on stage. There were 2,000 people, 30 restaurants.
Jeez.
I don't even know how many sponsors, liquor sponsors, brands. We were able to get wedding dresses sponsored, the men's suits, the engagement or the wedding bands.
The hotels for the couples.
And what was the cost to the couples participating or the people in the audience?
$15,000.
Okay.
Tickets were $150 for wedding. We had 500 wedding crasher tickets.
With the $15,000, nice. They each got a 200 tickets. People. 150 to 200 people.
Jeez. Okay.
And they can invite more and we gave a discount on that.
So, and then you had the wedding crasher tickets, people who just like, yeah, I'll go watch 9 couples get married. Why not?
And they were
and experience the,
they were amazing.
They were dressed up.
White tuxedos. Yeah.
Wow.
They were great. The wedding crashers were one of my favorite parts of the whole event.
God.
They took it so seriously.
They're just there to celebrate romantic love.
Oh, we had the hype man for the Nuggets, like getting everybody hyped.
Like
up the
PA
audience.
Guy?
I don't know what his name is.
Yeah, Josh. I don't know if he's still with the Nuggets, but he was like, yeah, not the PA.
Okay,
guy,
not okay.
The hype man that like gets on the mic on the.
Oh floor. Yeah, okay, yeah.
So they got, and so everybody had their sections with like banners up, like this is our section.
Holy crap!
And then it was like we had a multimedia thing, so there's huge screens, and so we had highlight videos playing of each couple and things like that.
Nice.
So when each couple came out to their vows and this, before they come out, their highlight video is playing and the crowd's going bananas. Like,
and we had them audio record their vows to each other and the other person didn't get to hear it until they walked down the aisle.
Oh, wow.
So we made it like our biggest thing was making it very personal while still being a festival and a group.
Yeah,
wedding.
But still like hype, you know, like
that. But it was like, I think that was for the couples. It still felt like their wedding. Like they
that's,
still
okay, that's
had
awesome.
That moment where it was like, this is us walking down the aisle. These are our personal vows to each other. This is our family sitting in the front
There's
row.
Our peeps.
Yeah. So.
And then we had it with, well, what are the foods that you like? And then we would get those restaurants, the best of whatever the type of food that they said that they wanted.
Wow.
And then same with like cocktails and wines and beer. And then desserts, we made sure like, what would your favorite desserts
they
be?
They got to pick their own cake.
Yeah. So we had all that created for them with like the most amazing pastry chefs creating all that.
We had a 30-foot long dessert tent.
Okay.
And then you couldn't just do it the way that you would normally do it. Like, oh, we're getting married. We got a guitar player when we walk in. We got the Colorado Symphony. Mm. We can't just have a band. Like, we had to go fly in the band that played at the Bush daughter's wedding in Dallas. So we flew them in from Texas. You know, a 16-piece orchestra that's out of control. Like, the best yeah. band in the country. So we had to put all of that together. And Shalisa put all that together. I did sponsorships.
Yeah.
Shalisa literally put every aspect of the entire event together, and the pressure was insane because she had
sure. to care well, and for it's your own couples. Wedding. Good God.
You should have seen their gift baskets. It took two people to drag this.
Because every sponsor gave them, here's a bottle of this. Liquor.
Here's 1942. Here's this great bottle of wine. Da da da. So yeah. everything, we had to lug them up the stairs and put them in their room. So instead of it just being like, oh, here's some cheese and some
yeah, right.
This, it was 40 or 50 pounds worth of stuff going into each of their rooms.
This sounds dope as hell, by the way.
Oh, you can watch the videos. We'll give you the videos. Okay, you can post them.
It was the best wedding ever.
And the coolest part is I listened recently to Ben's original take on, you should apply for the wedding party. It's going to be like this. And he described what it was going to be. And Shalisa hit it out of the park. It was everything he said it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
It was so scary because people were like, well.
We knew it was a success. We had a shuttle with all the couples at the end of the night after the festival to go back to our hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they were crying and saying this was the best night of our lives, like this is exactly what we wanted, and like
wow,
that was when we knew.
Yeah, the only thing that was missing was if we went back would be to really look into fireworks.
Oh jeez.
That would have been like the one thing that maybe we could have added that we
always dicey in Colorado.
That was a dry summer too.
Yeah, with permitting and all
they
that.
They actually wouldn't.
Yeah, and it's probably like $50,000 worth of to do a crappy fireworks show.
Yeah, that's rough. But it's coming back. Or is it?
There's only one way for it to come back,
yeah. And that would be with some sort of TV affiliation.
Okay.
We have talked to a lot of people in the past, especially in 2020, the beginning of 2020, there was a lot of interest, and then COVID.
Yeah. So, got Ronan.
Yeah. So throughout the last couple of years, there's been some interest here or there. We currently have some interest.
Wow. Cool.
So.
All right. Well, we'll stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Fun for who?
it'd be exciting.
It would be fun.
It'd be cool if we didn't have to do the casting.
That's the biggest thing.
Sure. Yeah, you want to outsource some of this. I mean, you need like a proof of concept where you kind of do everything yourself the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you go, see, this can work. And I'm happy to advise you and like ride herd here. But don't make me do all the in the trenches stuff.
Yeah, right? There was a lot of. And they did say like, wow, you actually did a pretty good job of casting this. And it wasn't really where our brains were going. But yeah. we knew the type of people and the type of commitment that they needed to make to be a part of it. So
yeah. Well, and I mean, what you're casting for essentially is a sensibility. Mm-hmm. You need people to have the right kind of mindset to go into this and make it 100% of what it aspires to be.
Yeah. And we wanted it to be diverse. We wanted to represent love in all forms.
Of course.
So. Yeah.
And like Bachelor Nation just tended to be very Midwestern, and everybody was gorgeous, but they all look the same. So Shalisa's like, we really need to work on making this a diverse event.
That's true. When you see the new season of The Bachelor announced, you go, did they cast all TV news anchors?
Right.
Like literally, like everyone is sort of blandly good looking,
uh-huh.
like in the way that TV sort of flattens out people's mm-hmm. aesthetics in a lot of ways. And I think to your point, that is perhaps one of the weaknesses of The Bachelor is the sort of homogeneity.
100%. I mean, it's been, more and more people have stopped watching because that's...
Sure. Because, yeah, you're getting fed the same kind of vanilla pudding over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, now is the part in the show where we do plugs. Where can people find your company? Where can they find you? Where can they find your events? Anything you all want to plug right now, the floor is yours.
Well, if you're in Houston, do you have people who are listening to this outside of Colorado?
I'm certain we do.
So our first event is Top Taco in Houston this year. That's in April.
April 25th.
Mm-hmm. I lived in Houston for a year. April is a lovely month there.
Yes. it changes quickly.
It certainly does.
So, and what we mean is it gets to 105 degrees for 60 days straight. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. So then we come back to Denver and we have Rare State Championship on June 20th. And that's at the Tivoli Quad. So that's rarestakefest.com.
Okay.
Then we have Top Taco, our 10th anniversary.
This is a big year for Top Taco.
Nice.
Biggest event we've ever done, probably. And if you've never been to Top Taco, it is an experience that you should have. A truly Colorado experience. It's about 3 football fields big, and it is the best party you'll ever go to. The best food, 5 stages of music. Like I think that we said before, I don't know if I mentioned that whole Taco Cello feel. It's crazy and fun and bizarre, and you walk in and you're like, oh my God, and you walk out and you should be saying the same thing. So it's
well, and who doesn't love tacos, man? That's like, geez.
Oh, it's much more than that.
But it is like the thing that we don't always mention is how amazing the food is. The food is so good.
Well, I would hope if you're calling yourself Top Taco.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a given, but it's also something
but
to know.
No, yeah.
The food is really good.
Doesn't hurt to underline it.
We have entire barbecue challenges. Then we have like a massive cocktail program, tents that are completely dedicated to mezcal.
Wow.
There's, I mean, hundreds of different bottles of spirits and wines and beers. And then there's 5 stages of music, and it's a party. And I mean that
John,
in
you'll
a
like
really
this.
Fun way.
Hmm. Last year, our new band who is coming back is a band called Metalachi.
I've seen Metalachi. And yeah, it's a mariachi band that plays heavy metal music.
Heavy metal.
And they have a comedy routine.
They're
that
so good.
I could never.
They're
get.
Amazing.
If I said those jokes, like I would get booed off the stage.
Oh, you'd get canceled.
They get away with it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. They would cancel us. But
so, they're back for a year.
God, I love them. I saw them at Geek Bowl when they played Geek Bowl a while ago, whenever I did that last. And yeah, those guys, when you hear like a mariachi version of Slayer's Raining Blood, you go, whoa, I didn't know I needed
That's
this in my life.
You know them then.
See, I knew you would like that.
I did get
how well you
I
know
got
me.
Negated this year at Chicken Fight. I'm bringing in Mini Kiss.
Yes,
okay,
we're
nice.
Skipping Mini Kiss for those
years. I got kiboshed on that one, which I'm still upset about.
What are you going to do?
Then, so that's the 10th anniversary. And also that one, geez, we raise a ton of money for charity.
Sweet.
At all of our events, but that one more so than even the other two.
Nice.
I think last year we raised $40,000 for charity.
Yeah, $50,000 before, $40,000 last year.
And one of our biggest charities is the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. So we work really closely with them.
I've done some work with the Hispanic Chamber. They do terrific work there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, and our other events, we raise a lot of money for the Colorado Restaurant Foundation, their education fund. And
so Top Taco is August 8th, and that's toptacofest.com.
Nice.
And then Chicken Fight returns to Ilitch's on August 29th.
Yep.
Day after my birthday.
And that's 5 stages of country, bluegrass, and blues music, and
rides.
Some of the best food. I'm telling you, think, oh, fried chicken. It is amazing food. Mm-hmm. The food is awesome at Chicken Fight. There's a huge bourbon whiskey component to it.
Sweet.
Obviously, there's...
Plus, that festival is an hour longer than all the other festivals.
Okay.
To account for making sure you can get on the roller coaster.
Yeah, and so it's an adult-only event. We rent out the whole park. So there's no kids.
Wow.
It's just for adults. All the rides and all the games are open.
These are all adults-only, yes?
Yes, 21 and over. Good. And that one's chickenfightfest.com.
Okay.
www.chickenfightfest.com.
And then on the socials, where can we... What anything you want to plug?
There's Top Taco Fest, there's Rare Steak Fest, and there's Chicken Fight Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the
handles.
For all of them.
Is there like a dining out?
Diningout.com.
Okay, perfect.
And we're about to relaunch. We're really excited about that one. We just hired Linnea Covington to be the managing editor of Diningout.com. If you're not familiar with Linnea, you do a search and you'll see that she's been a prolific writer for the Denver Post and for Forbes. And
she's great.
So we're pretty, really, really excited to have her quarterbacking our writing efforts.
Great.
So that's going to be beginning. I mean,
she
just onboarding her now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's Dining Out Magazine.
Yeah. And I think a big deal is like, we can't, we, couldn't do any of this without Buckhead and Cisco. Like, they were the ones who enabled us to have the food program that we have by getting behind us. And I think a lot of times when I listen to biographies or things like that, it's never that someone just does it on their own.
Yeah.
There's always somebody who like steps in and helps something become whatever it is that it's on its path to become. But it doesn't happen just like there's a founder and he does it all by himself. That's not what happens.
No, what you're talking about is like an inflection point where someone gets a hold of this and manages to level it up in a way that you is kind of impossible to do on your own.
Yeah. And so like any company you look at, you would see the same thing. So there's probably somebody a little bit larger or much larger in this case that believes in what you're doing and is like, we're getting behind you. To them, it's a drop in the bucket. To you, it's everything. Cisco and Buckhead being like, we love this food program. We love what you guys do. We're getting behind you. And let's make this even better than anything you ever imagined. Nice. In ways that we didn't even imagine it happening. That's what occurred. And that just fueled us to be able to like turn into whatever we turned into.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeff, Shalisa, it was so great to revisit with you again. I'm so happy to do this because you both have an incredible creative spirit in the way that you're manifesting these events and creating things that people want to go to. It's the type of energy that I just love to be around. So thank you for sharing all this with me on the show. And I wish you both nothing but continued success.
Thank you.
Thanks. That was fun.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for episode 360 of the John of All Trades podcast with Jeff Suskin and Shalisa Powell. What a terrific episode. What a terrific pair they make. Man, they're just putting on killer events in Denver and in Houston. Go to the companion blog piece to see those links, also in the show notes. So if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, iHeartRadio, whatever it is, you'll find it there. Also, if you're on those platforms and you have the opportunity, please leave me a rating, leave me a review. Those things help the visibility of the show. And you know what? Share it wherever you are. If you like this episode, if you like my show, share it on whatever platform you're on. JOAT Pod is the handle on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. I'm on some of those more than others. Probably don't do Snapchat. I'm almost never on there. But you know what? I've got the rhythm of how I say this down, so I say it anyway. Sharing is caring. Sharing is what we do among friends, right? That's what these social platforms are for. Take a moment and even if it's not me, if your friend is creating something, introduce it to other people. Be like, hey, you know what? My friend is doing this cool thing and I want more people to see it. That's an awesome gesture of goodwill, of friendship, of affection, and I adore you. So, like I said, got some announcements coming on the 10-year anniversary shenanigans. Those are coming up. Stay tuned to socials. I'll be back here next week with a fresh episode. That one's fun. That one's geeky. You're going to love it. So, episode previews go up on Monday. That's Facebook only. New episodes drop on Wednesday. I'm out of here. And until I hear you again, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.